Hello and welcome to Wise Women, The Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experience of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe and everything.
Hello again. So to continue the conversation slightly from last week, in that I want to stick with grief, if that's okay.
Oh, yeah.
I have been thinking a lot recently, I think this has been my major preoccupation, actually, on what is appropriate, what is my responsibility, our responsibility, by way of response, of holding, of living. How can I live in this time where there is so much grief? Mm. There is your personal grief, but there is, you know, planetary grief, yeah, like we have never known. Mm. For the fires in America, for what's happening in Afghanistan, for the floods, for the cyclone-y things, for, you know, almost anywhere you look, almost anywhere else in the world, something dreadful either is still or has just happened. Truly dreadful things. And yet, in my actual existence of my actual life, I have a beautiful, wonderful, nourishing, happy life. And I realized two things the other day, kind of congruently. As I was walking around the fields, literally weeping for the rest of the world. What set me off in particular was the swallows. There are astonishingly, or were the other day, still swallows flying around. There was a couple of swallows flying around with a load of swifts, which I have never noticed before and thought was weird. But they absolutely, I mean, you can tell the difference.
Yeah.
And there they all were together, presumably about to head off to Africa in a gang kind of thing. And it made me weep, firstly, because they were there and the joy and beauty of us still having some. I mean, there used to be uncountable numbers of them here and now there are only a few. But also I ended up really, really praying for, you know, please go and be well and be safe and get to Africa and then please come back safe and well and multiply and you know, may the swallow be a thing that flourishes rather than, you know, becomes less and less and less until there are no more. And guttingly, I discovered actually that the reason that the swallow population are so decimated actually has less to do with the lack of insects than it has to do with, in Africa, they put massive nets up and catch them and eat them. And that they're suddenly able to do that in far greater proliferation than has ever been the case in the past, because now they have access to Chinese-made nets, which means every Jack the Lad can afford a net.
Yes.
And, oh, I just found that so awful.
Oh.
Because, there's no kind of tally of how many. And, you know, we know that humans are very able to hunt something to extinction. We have done it repeatedly.
In my time in China in the 1980s, I was served sparrows for dinner. And I went to parks, there was no birdsong. In any of the cities, no birdsong.
Wow.
Because they were eaten.
Yeah.
But then in those days, they had to be eaten because there was, you know, probably, well, they didn't have to be eaten, but they, because they needed the food. Oh.
Anyway, so back to the kind of bigger picture. What I realised as I wandered around the fields weeping, which is, you know, not that unusual in these terrible times, was that on the one hand, so I started off with, oh, please help us, Mama Gaia, please help us to understand what we're doing. Mm. And then I realised that, of course, everything that's happening is her helping us to understand what we're doing.
Yes.
And that prayer doesn't need praying anymore. Mm. What we need is to now find ourselves in the place where, as certainly as us in in the, you know, commercial West. I can't think what else to call us. The consumer-obsessed West. And actually China, because they're fully joining in, and maybe India as well. I don't know. I'm not pointing a finger at anyone. I'm just saying that the world where people fly around and do shipping in massive, fishing in massive trawlers, and always want the food or the piece of furniture or whatever that comes from somewhere else rather than the one that grows outside their window, is, it has to stop. It has to.
Mm.
And that, on the one hand, it seems like maybe we have to go through all this devastation to understand how indivisibly interwoven we are, and how, you know, your choice, my choice to eat something that's wrapped in plastic and comes from far away and came from an aeroplane and all the rest of it is why the world is burning.
Yes.
And that it's our responsibility, as the ones who are in the main responsible. America and the UK are horrifically culpable in this regard.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's our responsibility to watch, frankly, while the world burns.
Yes.
And to know that we're to blame and to feel the horrific grief that that brings. And, but also to understand that if that's all we do, we really are truly fucked.
Yeah.
And that whilst it is our responsibility, in my opinion, to not look away, we also have a responsibility to find love and joy and hope.
Yes.
And a new way of being.
Yes. We and have that, to give it up.
Yeah. You, dear listener, don't see the arm movement. So what Maggie just said might be mysterious.
Yes.
We have to give it up to God in her world. We have to give it up to Gaia.
We have to lift ourselves up to look from the soul to be the receive what we can do.
Mm.
Yes. And say, show me what is mine to do today.
Yeah, exactly. Which brings us round to a thing we've talked about.
Yes,
a
again
lot.
And again.
But for me, this what the moment is calling for is that in the asking of show me what is mine to do, that we're asking not just about show me what my work is, which I think lots of people have taken responsibility for, kind of show me what my work is, but also show me how I might live in literally every pore of my being. Show me what to eat, what to wear, where to live, how to feel, how to drink, how to love, how to cry, how to laugh, how to
live the least harmful weave.
Yes.
Because unfortunately, pretty much at the moment, that's all we can do is the least harmful shopping and things like that.
Well, in our everything.
Yes.
But I think energetically as well, we have to ask and learn how to live in the least harmful weave.
Yes.
And that therefore, also we need to take responsibility for how we think and how we feel.
Yes.
Because they are part of what co-creates reality.
And if you look at the spiritual, so-called spiritual folk on Facebook, the hatred, the despising that's coming out.
The divisiveness is extraordinary.
The divisiveness, the sheeple things and all that. And I don't care who's right or wrong.
No, me neither.
On vaccination. I don't care. I care about how I lift the issue up and I talk to the divine about it and I bring some good somewhere.
Yeah.
And telling people that they're wrong or something like that or is dropping your energy. It's purely back into the ego, which is I'm right, you're wrong. One of the things that I'm very aware of is that the ego likes an enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you lose one enemy, you're going to look for another.
So you've said this before, and yes. I still...
Because the ego's divisive, it's dualistic. So my tribe is the right tribe, and your tribe is the wrong tribe.
But so, firstly, without sounding too fucking sanctimonious, my ego doesn't do that.
No, well, that's why I talk to you, because you're brilliant.
But also, In my way of thinking and my experience of the world, witchy as that is, that's... So I talk a lot about what I call Celtic, kind of with a K, thinking.
Yeah.
And to me, one of the most fundamental aspects of Celtic thinking is and instead of and or.
Yes.
And that, to me, the fundamental way of being in beauty in the world is to be in the generosity and the reciprocity and the kind of head fuck, really, of and, which is that I am perfectly willing to live in a world where you and I, who hold opposing views, I mean, actually, you and I
don't.
Clearly, don't. No,
we are technically.
But let's pretend you and I have really opposing views. Let's pretend that one of us is super into conspiracy, and the other of us is super into vaccinations or something. I don't know. But that I'm always perfectly allowing of a world where either, neither, or both of us could be completely correct.
Absolutely.
And that it doesn't matter. That does not matter. Mm. Your version of reality could be, if you want to be dualistic, in complete and utter opposition of my version of reality. Yeah. And it doesn't make either of us right or wrong. And that, to me, that is not some weirdness unique to Susie Crockford. That is how the Celts with a K, so all over much of this area of Europe, lived. The thinking is completely fundamental to all of the spirits that I encounter in these ways and on my path deep into the land of this place. And if that's who they are, then there is a level at which it is also who we are and who we have been.
Yes.
And so, does that mean the Celts with a K are particularly super good at ignoring their ego? Or
I don't think they built up complex egos that we had with so much information, with all the television, with all the news, with all the opinionated rubbish that we have that is unimportant. I mean, we can have a whole argument in a pub about who should have won Love Island.
I don't even know what Love Island is.
No, but
is.
It's a reality show. Do you know what I mean? So the ego has been trained to have so many opinions now, whereas the Celts with a K and the Celts with a C, for that matter, got on with living.
Yeah.
We don't get on with living anymore. I've noticed it in myself as well, certainly the last week or so, which have been a little bit difficult. The relief of just sitting down in front of the telly and watching The West Wing. Because I find it an honourable programme, you know, and it has ethical and moral situations in it, which make Lion and I sit and discuss them. So I love it, but it's a huge relief to be in the fantasy world.
Yeah.
And it's because we are naturally dualistic. We've moved from, we're both living on different patches of land, but my crops failed, so I need some of your crops failed, so therefore you've got to be the enemy, I've got to go and take your crops, which is a horribly animalistic, and I don't mean, I'm not being rude to animals, the negative human animalistic attitude is I'm taking your thing, covetousness. So we've moved from that into huge entitlement opinionated lives.
Yeah. Oh my goodness, I've been confronted by entitlement a lot lately.
I mean, every time I see a post on social media about they're closing off our freedoms, they may be attempting to close our privileges.
Yeah. I think we've spoken
We've spoken about this before.
But anyway,
they can't affect how I feel.
No. No, they can't make you
they
feel
can't
anything.
Make me. I can live a perfectly free and happy existence if I can never leave the United Kingdom again.
Oh, me too. I haven't done for 5 years.
No. I mean, I'd like to go to Cyprus and see Tim and the family, but I can talk to them on Zoom. And even they're adults. They've got their own kids. They've got their own lives. They don't need me.
Mm.
And if they do, they can phone.
Yeah.
You know, so I... But this need to make the other wrong, Richard Rohr summed it up, and it may not be originally him, it may be Thomas Merton or somebody else like that. If you will not transmute your pain, you will transmit it.
Ooh, I like that.
If you will not transmute your pain, you will transmit it. And that's what the ego does. It projects its own pain onto the other.
Yeah.
Therefore, the other must be hated to save us from having to go inside ourselves to work out what's going on.
Okay.
That's pure psychology, Jungian psychology. It's not Christian stuff.
No, okay. So what I see is that basically what you're saying is, and this is something, again, I've been mulling over recently, is that we are, as a society, too comfortable, and the fantasy world is too available to us to actually properly engage with a reality where it would clearly be the case that all of us could all really easily live in a better world if we chose generosity instead of competition.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that it's our levels of comfort.
Yes.
And convenience.
Yes.
That prevent us from doing that.
Yes. And all our TV shows have oppositional people. All the cop shows have the rogue cop who's different from the others. So that encourages us to think that our own personal views and our individuation is it. And that because that cop wins. But actually, that is a huge trap for us in the modern world. And this is Kabbalistic stuff, or I'm sure you'll absolutely agree with it from your end, which is that you have to come out of the ego to individuate, to find yourself, and then offer that to the universe. Because if you hold on to your individuation, I am the important thing here,
mm-hmm.
then you start transmitting your pain because other people won't see it like that.
Yes. Because they're the important thing.
Yes. Here. Yes. So we have what we would call indigenous tribes or something, of which there are so few now, who live in a healthy ego. With a healthy individuation, which is we are one.
Mm-hmm.
We are one with the land. We observe the land. We know when the crop isn't growing. We know when we have to move. We know what's going on here. And each of us has our unique aspect that contributes to that one.
Yeah.
And together we make our formula, whatever our form of worship is, our honouring of the greater all. Mm. And that's the healthy way of living.
Yeah, totally.
But we don't do that. We either stay stuck in the tribal, my family right, your family wrong, my country right, your country wrong, my ego, my religion right, your religion wrong. Or we individuate out to say, well, they're all wrong and I've got it right. But then you will look for another tribe that agrees with you, but then you will disagree with them. And Richard Rohr, again, on conservatives and liberals is really interesting because he says, you think that the conservatives are always the problem if you're a liberal. And, of course, you think the liberals are always a problem if you're a conservative. But he said, the thing about the liberals is you join the liberals because you want to fight for a better world, for a change. But you don't have the structure in place or the plans sorted out to fulfil that. So you lead the revolution and then you lock it in place and you become the conservatives.
Hmm.
He's talking about the patterns of the way the world goes. Yeah. And I think there's a lot of truth in that. Of course, there are wonderful and marvellous exceptions, but that's how the human psyche sort of works it. I mean, think about something like the Russian Revolution. That was to free the proletariat. Well, yeah. That didn't last long, did it?
No, it didn't.
Chinese Revolution, the People's Army, that didn't last long. The people went back into slavery. And it was basically the liberals that fought for the freedom. But unless we've got the higher consciousness, we can't live that freedom that we fight for.
So my brain is, as ever, trying to go in all kinds of places at once. So the first is that, sadly, I cannot remember where I read this, and I can't remember of which continent it speaks. Mm. But I remember reading in a reputable source recently-ish that there is a tribe somewhere of indigenous people, reasonably uncontacted, but that one of the things that was absolutely extraordinary about them was that there was no identification of self. There was only us. There was only we. And that...
Yes, I read that too. It's beautiful.
It is beautiful, but it also challenges the notion that it is intrinsic, that it's an intrinsic part of being human to identify as a singularity rather than as part of a group.
Yes.
And that if you look at the wholesome way in which, and holistic way in which, indigenous intact cultures view their place in the world, as far as we can tell from out here in white middle England, you know, etc., that not only is the individual ever more important than the whole, even humanity is not more important than the rest of what is. It's definitely absolutely not seen to be a network, a web. The understanding that it's indivisibly interwoven and totally interdependent is completely intrinsic to all ways of being. And that, therefore, this idea that the ego is this inescapable thing is, to me, demonstrably inaccurate.
Well, it is. You've just got to know you've got one to start. If you know what's going on, you can change. Absolutely. But if you don't know what's going on, how do you know what to change?
No, completely, which is where I began, is that we have to know what's going on in order to change. We have to.
Yeah. Did you ever read Douglas Adams?
I read The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Did you read Life, the Universe and Anything about the people of cricket?
No.
Okay. The planet cricket was a fabulous, and I'm going to misquote Douglas here because he puts it better than anybody else. It was a planet of fabulous happiness and joy. People went out in the evenings after their day's work and sang songs that would net Paul McCartney another £1 million and things like that. You know, and they had a completely cloudy sky always. They never saw stars or sun. Mm-hmm. They were completely enclosed in what I call the Tupperware sky. You get a lot of them in Devon, you know, where it's just uniformly grey. So the people of cricket were joyously happy and everything went fine and they lived simple agricultural, hunting and little lives and everything was marvellous and wonderful. And then one day a spacecraft crashed on the planet. Mm-hmm. And they went, what on earth is that? What is it? What happened? What this? And took great interest in it. Mm-hmm. And then built a whole new spacecraft built on the wreckage of that to go and see where it came from. Mm-hmm. So they went up and they flew up through the cloud out into the atmosphere and they saw the whole universe of stars and galaxies and everything. And they sat there in their spaceship and they looked at each other and said, it'll have to go. And then the planet cricket waged war on the whole of the universe to get rid of it because they didn't want it, because it had disturbed their equilibrium.
Oh my God.
Wasn't he brilliant? But that's just what we do. I don't like it. It's got to go.
It's so weird. So what I thought you were going to say was that they turned round back down, buried the spacecraft, buried the evidence and just went, nope, nothing out there.
Well, that's another possible alternative that we do, isn't it?
It is. It is. But yeah, why are those the two obvious alternatives rather than how amazing, how fascinating... Yes. And?
Because the ego is primed to see everything as a benefit or a threat, because it's purely dualistic.
The ego is primed to see everything as a benefit or a threat.
Because its only job is to keep you alive.
Yeah, I realise that. Its job is to keep you safe. Yeah. And I am aware that it's fundamentally the way to keep us safe is to prevent us from changing.
Yes.
Because typically we're not in peril at this moment. Yeah. If we have the liberty to think about such things, we're probably not in danger right now.
And it's so easy, isn't it? You know, I feel rather bad about the world. I'll watch the telly and forget about it.
Yeah.
I'll read a good book and forget about it. And I'm as culpable as anybody. We're sort of taking it back, if I might, right? I just wanted to mention the cardboard boxes in Lidl.
Okay.
Because Lidl have started selling for £1.50 a box, like a Riverford box.
Okay.
Of out-of-date vegetables and fruit.
Cool.
For £1.50.
Well done, Lidl.
And I looked at it, I spotted it for the first time ever yesterday because somebody else had got one of them. I went over and looked at the boxes. And it was a real exercise of consciousness, which was lots of stuff that was going to be thrown away but was in plastic. Mm-hmm. Was perfectly edible. Mm-hmm. But it had British blueberries, two packs of British blueberries. I have a blueberry tree, so I've got blueberries at the moment, which is lovely. But I thought, I can freeze those, which means I can have the joy of blueberries all winter without buying anything from Chile. And I had to sort of balance the buying plastic with the carbon footprint bit. I don't buy blueberries out of season. Mm-hmm. I only buy English ones. But I just thought everything is such a fine balance of choice, and it's hard work for us.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's the point.
Too damn idle is why.
Yeah. Because I looked at all these boxes and worked out what could I use, what would be really, really useful, and how wonderful that. And I just thought it was lovely to have that opportunity. But even that was, oh God, that box, or do I have a box at all? And most people would just go, oh, don't bother. And I would, in many situations, don't bother. It's too much hard work.
Mm. That is sadly where I came to is that mostly we just simply can't be asked.
No, we can't.
And I think for me, fundamentally, we can't be asked because, bless us, our ego is keeping us safe because we're quite comfortable. Thank you very much.
Yes.
And we who created this mess, our culture, not us as individuals, but our culture created this mess. And whether we agree with it, whether we even voted or not, we are the culture. I have such a big problem with this idea that it's up to governments and corporations to change the world. No, it isn't. It's up to us. It's up to every bloody last one of us.
Yeah, which is back to the Garden Eden of blame. You know, you should have. They should take care of us. It shouldn't have happened this way. It was your fault. No, we're all responsible. We do our bit.
Yeah. And that, you know, if we did, if all the people who actually thought that buying plastic for, or no, let's make this different way around. If all the people, so I'm picking a kind of fixable, obvious, easy thing, but I do genuinely believe this actually applies to everything, that there is potentially a solution for every single thing. That is what the IPCC report has said, is we are teetering on the very knife edge of too late, but it's not too late.
Yes.
But so just to pick the one I usually bang on about, plastic. So if we decide as a person, oh, I really don't like it that the ocean is full of plastic and all the fish are choking on it and the seabirds are starving to death because they're mistaking the plastic.
Full of plastic. Yeah,
et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Isn't it awful? Whoever, big plastic producer, fuck knows, let's just, Aldi, whoever it was you just said, Lidl. So actually, I think Lidl and Aldi are both trying to do their bit quite hard, actually. So let's pick a different one. Tesco's or Walmart. Mm. They're to blame. They wrap it all in plastic.
Mm. You bought it.
Exactly. Mm. You bought it.
And I did buy stuff from Lidl yesterday.
And if you stopped buying it, they would stop
producing
it in plastic.
Yeah.
And that is, I might have said this before, I'm pretty sure I have said this before, but consumer power is demonstrably working already.
Yes.
In, like, look at the incredible proliferation of vegan food. Look at the incredible proliferation of recyclable. Look at the way in which the Pride movement made, you know, so much difference. I mean, I am not homosexual. I really fucking hope that from my very cis, straight, she perspective, it looks like things are getting better to me.
Mm.
Please, dear listener, let me know if that's not the case. Mm. But, we have very significantly more power than we are typically prepared to admit. And
our attitude matters. Our energy matters. You're saying what we'd say and do matters. If we drag the energy down anywhere, if we've got to hold this dichotomy of yes, things are terrifying, and I can do good.
Yeah,
we've got to hold that balance, and it's the balance the ego is really not comfortable with, but we really have to do it. And also, without going into denying of situations, I met this amazing black man, Dempsey, who came to stay with us when they were quarantining with us. And I talked to him about prejudice, and I talked to him about all the stories about black men being pulled over. None of it has ever happened to him.
Yay, thank God. It's not everywhere.
Because he doesn't focus on it.
Mm.
He got once stopped by the police for no reason whatsoever, and he asked them courteously why they'd stopped him, and they wondered where he was and what his address was. So he gave them his driving license, and they didn't hassle him. Now another black man would have got a different police officer,
mm-hmm.
and would have had the trouble. Now I'm not blaming black men for the horrible things that happens, absolutely not, but you can lift your consciousness so it doesn't happen to you, or not so often, and then teach others to lift their consciousness. And cops can teach each other to lift their consciousness. We're all here to say to the other, how can we lift this up? How can we rise it up?
How can we get into the world of and?
And, yes. Yes, this is utterly, utterly awful. And what is the linking thing here between this happening to you several times? The linking thing is you.
Yeah, the only thing is you and the wildly prejudiced, violent, beastly.
Yes, world. Yes. No, let's accept that there is so much wrong. But why is one person picked and the other not? And I have a story about this from when I was at college. There was a rapist working in the street I lived in. Working, terrible thing. And he attacked two women.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a cub reporter at the time, and I was there at the committal. He was committed to trial, and I was really interested because it was my street. And I managed to say, to have a word with this man before he was sent down. And I said, I live in that street, and I've seen you, and you never attacked me. Why? And he said, you were always walking with a big man. I wasn't. But there was something about my energy that said, don't attack her. Something protected me. Now, I don't know why that happened, but that man perceived that I, who he did see frequently, was not the victim.
But that, I totally hear and understand what you're saying.
And
we cannot be held responsible for the misdeeds of others,
no,
because we've had a bad life, or been brought up to stand in the place of actually I feel like a victim, and therefore I emanate victim energy. That is not the fault of the people who are attacked.
No, of course it's not the fault of the people who are attacked. Absolutely not. It's not my mother's fault that my father was unfaithful to her and eventually left her. But she had postnatal depression, and she became somebody who was difficult to love. Not her fault. Mm. Absolutely not her fault. Absolutely not her fault. But maybe if somebody had, in those days, had understood more about mental health processes, had given her counselling, had helped her develop, my father might not have been unfaithful.
Mm.
No victim is responsible for what happens to them. No victim is at fault. But if we're going to save this planet and our peoples, all our peoples, the only way is up. The only way is to teach ourselves to raise our energy so that we won't have the terrible challenge of going into our wound.
Yeah, okay.
This is, until we get to the point where we say, I am here in the joy and the love, as well as the pain, we won't lift our energy, and we will transmit more of that pain.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think that, as usual, we're sort of vaguely saying the same
thing. We're vaguely saying the same thing, but you say it so much more skillfully than I do. I use horrible... probably masculine language in many ways, but it just comes back to the... I've lived an absolutely privileged life where I have escaped so much potential horror.
Yeah.
I've been in situations where I should have been shot, should have been raped, should have been this, should have been that. Something in the mindset I was trained in or I learnt saved me.
Mm-hmm.
Because other people in those situations weren't as blessed as I was. So at the very least, can we try and train our children in a better mindset so these things cannot happen to them and they will not perpetrate their pain onto others? Because everybody who attacks or is cruel is wounded.
Yeah.
Hideously wounded. And the more we blame them, the more we stop helping them heal.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's another instance of and is let's have compassion for both and understand that people who go around doing things like that aren't in a joyful, beautiful place. And, you know, not that I'm not Pollyanna-ish, ridiculously suggesting that we all need to be in beauty and joy all of the time.
Yeah.
But that I suppose ultimately we need to take responsibility for each of us for what we've been handed. And what every one of us as a human being has been handed is a lineage of trauma. It's hardwired into our DNA.
Yes.
By varying degrees.
Yes.
And then, yes, I agree. What you're saying is it's up to us what we do with that.
But only if we've got to that stage of individuation where we can look at it.
Individuation from what? I don't understand this individuation.
Okay,
thing.
They're common. It's based. Let's go purely Kabbalistic. If you get to Tiferet, you can see the situation with detachment.
What's Tiferet?
Tiferet is the true self. The place of the true self where you are. You have. At Tiferet, you are able to see the physical world with a detachment that says, I see the truth. You know, you're like a soaring eagle, can see the bigger picture. But you are also in the centre of your psyche, which means that you are balanced and ready to respond to what you see, and you will give it up.
Okay, so to me, I almost see that as the reverse of individuation, in that what I believe you to be talking about is that when we get to the place where we can see that we are molded by history, circumstance, the things that we've been, you know, that are hardwired into our DNA, as it were, by way of trauma or patterns or, you know, ancestral whatever. And that when we get to the place where we can see that we are not that, and that the piece of us which is, to me, this is the ego, to me, is the one who tells the story.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, the one who is able to observe the story and step outside of and beyond the story is not the ego.
No,
that is
not
the part of us that is in the all, that is in the very opposite of the ego. It's not in individuation.
Ah, now you see, that's where we've got wrong, because for me the word individuation means you step out of ego.
Okay, but individuation implies separateness.
Yes,
it
does. But it's a yes and, because you can individuate well or badly. You can individuate into selfish me, which is looking down at the ego and connecting back to the ego. Or you can individuate as in, I am not this.
Mm-hmm.
I observe this, which is what you were using. So the Kabbalistic goal is to individuate in that way, in that you can see what's actually happening with discernment.
Okay, but to me, in order to be able to see that and to truly know the truth of what it is to be in the observer rather than the ego, is to understand that I am only part of all that is, and that the I is the least important part of that sentence.
Yes, I hear. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, you're putting it so much better than I am. Basically, okay, so try and sum it up. You've got your group ego, your family ego, which is I'm part of this family rules, this is what this family does, we go to this church, we do this, we do that. And then you individuate by coming out, and usually teenage years rebelling, to start with, by going, I don't like that. I don't want to do that. And you will either get stuck in an egoic sort of individuation, which is, I'm just going to reject that and find my own way. Or you can step back and go, I get hurt by that. Now why? Why does she do that? What's going on there? And the individuation is to start in observing it more dispassionately and understanding why things happen. But you can't get much further with that without going into the great all. Which is, okay, this is a bigger karmic pattern. My whole family's living in a karmic pattern here. So I'm awake to that now. I am individual and awake. Now I'm going to ask you up there, what can I do to heal that pattern?
Okay, which is perhaps why we are potentially going to go around in many circles with this, simply because, to me, there is absolutely no separation between you up there and us down here. And that to step into the place beyond the ego is to step into the all that is, and therefore to be in the love and generosity of the and, and to be with the knowing that as a piece of all that is, as a thread in the great weave of all that is, my responsibility is to be the best thread I can, understanding that there's a hole in the weave without me, but that I am no more than a thread in the weave, and that from that place I can strive, or I want to say choose, but it's not just like I choose this, can strive to become the truth of knowing that I am no more separate from all that is than a drop of water is separate from a river.
But you're describing perfect individuation in my language. Okay. Perfect. But look at the world. It's not doing it. It's individuating badly.
Into ego.
No, not actually ego, into pride. I am more important than this. That's not actually, in Jungian terms, ego. That's superego. So
So are we arguing semantics then?
We are arguing semantic now, absolutely, because you're describing perfection to me. But the majority of the world has gone from, what do you think of me, which is how Kabbalah would define ego. Mm. What about me? What does it matter about me? Do you love me? Is this all right for me? Am I comfortable here? So it all relates back to the person, whereas the individual I is, what is mine to do?
Mm-hmm.
Only mine to do. Whereas the negative aspect of it is, I do what I want.
Yes.
There's a very subtle difference there, but can you see what I mean?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
The world's problem at the moment is I do what I want. And in fact, the whole China situation is not so much the ego of China, but the individuation of China of I want what the West has got.
Mm-hmm.
And that's happening an awful lot, which is I want what you've got. You can't tell me I can't have it. So that's the I looking down to the you can't tell me of the ego. So it's a false individuation of pure selfishness.
Mm.
And we're honing it.
We're honing it?
Yes, we're making it bigger, this false individuation of selfishness.
Yeah, okay. Which takes me right back to the beginning of, we the individuals have a responsibility to not do that.
Yeah. We have to transmute our pain, or we will transmit it.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like a very clear and perfect way to end this podcast.